Morning, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
It's great to see everybody here this morning. We are going to move into the topic is basically first year sponsorship. Mindy is going to be doing that, and then Larry in about an hour is going to be doing the same topic. So we're going to get a perspective, a man and a woman's perspective, two different people's perspective, and that's going to be interesting, I'm sure. I first met Mindy. I do some volunteer work at a treatment center, a local treatment center in our area, and I was giving a talk on the Big Book, as is my wont. You know, I love doing that, I ended up meeting Mindy there, who was there listening, and we talked for about 5 minutes, and it was just one of those intuitive things. I knew that she would be right for this seminar, just talking with her for 5 minutes. And so the next week or so when I was back there, I asked her to do this. And right away she said, absolutely, I would love to do something up at the Wilson House, you know. And so here she is. She's an amazing person. She ended up moving up to New Jersey after a period of time down south. But I won't tell her story. I'll let her do it. Go ahead, Mindy.
Thanks. Hi, y'all. I'm Mindy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mindy.
My day of grace is the 6th day of February, 1988, and for that I'm grateful. And y'all should be, too, if you knew how I drank. I have lots of notes here. Most of this is nervous energy and self-will. So if you see me kind of going through my notes a little bit, let's just hope that God can help me not see my notes and actually just kind of speak through me. Larry did say that he says something to the effect of, if I give you a resentment, let your God talk to my God, because it's got nothing to do with me. That's a really good way to get me off the hook, so I really like that. Anytime I can get off the hook, I'm all for that. So thanks a lot, Larry, for giving me that idea. I was really excited to be talking about first-year sponsorship, because I happen to do an awful lot of sponsoring. I really kind of always have, especially since I moved to New Jersey. And I am from down south. I'm from Texas. And I'll tell you a little bit about my experience with sponsorship, initially the way that I was sponsored. I had a bit of a problem when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in February of 1988 in Texarkana, Texas, which is where I sobered up. Because I came in, and the very first thing that they told me is that I needed to get a sponsor. And, see, I had a problem because I didn't like men or women, and that's really kind of all we had at the time. Down there, it's a little different now. You can kind of choose sometimes, you know, you're not really sure what you're getting, but it's a little easier to do now than it was then. But at the time, I really only had a choice of men or women, so I had to get a sponsor. So what I did was I got the lesser of two evils. I got a man as a sponsor, and I figured that, you know, that was the lesser of two evils, because I didn't trust you women and I could control you old boys. So therefore I got a man as a sponsor. And he was sober for a very long time, 3 years I discovered later. And he very first thing he told me was, well, he said, if you want to stay sober and you want to stop hurting, you'll do everything I tell you to do. If I tell you to go stand in the middle of the road on your head and paint your butt red, you'll do it. And I don't know what made me say yes, sir, but I did say yes, sir, because just don't tell me what to do. No, nobody tells me what to do. So I said, okay, so that's what I would do. So what we did was is we started working the steps. Now, I actually don't remember opening up the Big Book. I remember them talking about the Big Book, and I remember lots of talk about the Big Book, and I remember really, really tough talk about the Big Book, but I don't actually remember getting into the Big Book. To tell you the truth, I don't remember an awful lot. Even today, I don't remember an awful lot. But I don't really think that's anything here or there. So I recall then at one point we were working on my fourth step, and he said to me, he says, okay, now it's time for you to get a woman as a sponsor. And I said, wait a minute, we've had this discussion. I already know how I already feel about women. How am I supposed to find a woman as a sponsor? He says, oh, that's easy. You get the woman you're most afraid of. Oh, well, now I knew immediately who that was. That was Diane. Diane was in every meeting I ever went to. She talked in every meeting that I was at. She had been the GSR. At the time, she was the DCM. She knew the steps, the traditions, and God forbid the 12 concepts of world service, and I wanted nothing to do with her. Nothing at all. And every meeting that I went to that she spoke, she looked directly at me, and she was talking directly to me, and I knew this. Intuitively, I knew this. So therefore, I was terrified of her. So I knew that this had to be my sponsor. So I walked up to her one day. Now, I'm 6'2", for those of you who have been afraid to ask. Diane was 5 foot, if that, and that was on a good day. And I walked up to her, and I said, Diane, would you be my sponsor? And she said, oh, I'd love to. And that was the nicest thing she ever said to me. It went downhill from there. She never once asked me what I wanted to do. She never asked me my opinion. She never asked me if I liked it or I didn't like it. She never asked me where I wanted to go, what I thought about where we were going. She just told me, you know, what to do, when to be there, and how to think and how to act. And she also told me that not to think. That was the biggest thing they told me. Other than shut up, it was not don't think, don't think. And she said, and I asked her, how come I can't think? And she says, well, because your solution to your problem is worse than your problem. All right. So I had to think about that. So then after a while, though, you know, I kind of cleared up a little bit because, you know, we do. And I saw around and I saw the sign and it said, think, think, think. Now I had her. So I said, see that sign on the wall? It's just think, think, think. What about that? She said, that's for us. Great. So I was just pretty much screwed every which way I turned. And she started, and I learned lots of things about sponsorship. I learned never ask your sponsor a question you don't already know the answer to. And what I mean by that is I asked her one time. I said, Diane, what's a GSR? She says, you know what? You're it. You find out. I don't really think this is sponsorship. I haven't found a lot of that stuff in the big book yet. I've been looking. But the interesting thing about all that is that I you know, a lot of what I learned, and I know this now, but I didn't know it then, is that a lot of what it was that I was being taught back then was really the oral tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, what is that? That means it didn't come from the book. Now, does that mean that some of it didn't come from the book? No, that's not what that means. What that means is just that they were passing down what they had heard in meetings from people who had probably read the book and studied the book and had maybe been taught by somebody else who had read the book and studied the book at some point. Because I've learned since then that many, many, many of the things that I was taught came directly from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, much of that stuff, and all of the concepts that I was being taught. However, you know, unorthodox it was, it comes coming directly from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or the 12 and 12. And that's exactly what it was that I've discovered that I was taught was the oral tradition. And I really thought that I was a big book thumper. I really did. And I was a big book thumper. It just wasn't exactly big book, you know, because I didn't know where to find it or anything like that. So, I didn't know this. I didn't know this. And I'll tell you how I learned this very painful lesson. Most really good lessons are very painful, unfortunately. And I generally have to learn these things in a very painful way. So what happened was this. I didn't feel like I made the decision. I feel like it was made for me, but we always make our own decisions. But I ended up moving to New Jersey. Now you see why going from Texas to New Jersey would not be a real decision that I would want to make. But this is why I say that. But nevertheless, I ended up in New Jersey. And what happened was, is they told me this. They said, now, don't you go up there and tell them they're doing it wrong. Now, I don't know why they thought I was going to be doing that. They taught me well, and I was very accepting of other people and their thoughts and beliefs. And so therefore, I couldn't imagine why they were telling me that. Don't you go up there and tell them they're doing it wrong. So, of course, the very first thing I did when I got up here was I told you people you were doing it wrong. because you were. And and the first thing that you were doing wrong was you didn't even say the Lord's Prayer right. Y'all didn't even have all the right pauses in it. I couldn't keep up. You were saying it way too fast. So even to this day, if you'll watch me when we say the Lord's Prayer, I'm very stubborn Texas alcoholic. I still say all the right pauses, and at the end, I speed up and keep up. So I end when y'all end. But I still have all my own pauses in it. So, you know, when you go to the international convention, they say it the way they do in Texas. They have all the right pauses in it. So the rest of the world is right. You people in, and this is not New Jersey, but the people in New Jersey, they said they do it all wrong. So, huh?
New York too.
New York too. They, all right. See there? Not just me. But this is, so what I had to learn was, whenever, what happened to me was I was dropped right in the middle of the world, actually. And I realize this now, is that there are really pockets of enthusiasm around the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really didn't know that there were two Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that there was the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then the Program of Recovery, which is the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm repeating myself, but I'll continue to do so. So I didn't really realize that, and I didn't know that that was actually found on the first page. Oh, see, I'm bad at page numbers. See, it's, oh, here it is. It's on page 17. I'm always good at it's on the right-hand side of the page at the bottom or the left-hand side of the page in the middle. See, these things I know. Page numbers I don't know. But it's on page 17, and I'll just kind of, I'll read a little bit here just to pass the time. It says, unlike the feeling of the ship's passengers, however, our joy and escape from disaster is not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in the common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we're now joined. Tremendous fact for every one of us is that we've discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. Well, that depends on what group you're in. Okay. But here's what I learned, and this is where it teaches me, is that there's two Alcoholics Anonymous. It's telling me that here's the fellowship. We're all in the water. It's cold. We just had a wreck. All right, so we're sharing in a common peril. And then we get saved, and we're alive, and this is wonderful, and we have these nice parties. But I'll tell you what, as the years go on, we're not going to continue to meet. But that in and of itself would not never have held us together as we're now joined. Here's the deal. We have a common solution. That's the 12 steps. That's the way out. The way out of this common peril, which is alcoholism, this horrible, horrific disease, this which holds our minds and our bodies hostage. There's the difference. All right. So there's the two things. There's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Program of Recovery. But it doesn't say, and it says we, essentially, it says we have to have both of them. We have to have both of them in order to survive this illness, this common peril. All right? So there, all right, let's see. Now I had to move to New Jersey to figure this out. And how did I figure this out, and how did I find this page? Well, the way that I did this was because I was going to meetings and I wasn't hearing nothing about the Big Book. I wasn't hearing anything at all about the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't hearing anything at all about the steps. I'm not really sure what I was hearing about. I heard about somebody's cat dying, and that was all right, but I didn't hear anything about the solution, how it affected them as far as their recovery was concerned. And I was hearing lots and lots of problems, and I was hearing lots and lots of whining. I was hearing lots and lots of stuff. And I really wasn't quite sure, I wasn't quite sure what to do. So what I do? I shared. I raised my hand. I raised my hand in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did that a lot. And I wasn't very popular after a very short period of time. And fortunately, although my sponsors were giving me really the oral tradition, they really were giving me Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very grateful for that. And I have to be very careful whenever I get up on my little ego pedestal, which I do periodically, because that's just kind of occupational hazard, or it's a vocational hazard of being a Big Book dumper in Alcoholics Anonymous, is we get up on our little pedestals and we know better. Yes, we do. And we look down upon someone else who's not doing it the way that we know is the right way to do it. So therefore, I totally forgot what I was going to say. See, when I go off on tangents like that, see, this is audience participation. You need to know this right off the bat. So whenever I forget where I'm at, you have to remind me. Where was I?
Oral tradition.
Oral tradition. Okay. So what I didn't realize was, is that, you know, thank God for that. Thank God for that. And what they did was also they gave me tapes. They gave me AA tapes. And they gave me tapes because they went to lots and lots of AA conventions. We do that in Texas. We travel, we go to lots and lots of AA conventions. So they would throw tapes at me and they would say, when we're not around to tell you how to live your life and what to do and how to think, you listen to these tapes and you do everything they tell you to do. So there's Chuck Chamberlain, there's Clancy, there's Jim G. There's, I mean, I could just go on and name like a million of them. And all of them are my sponsors. So many of the times, some of the things that I say, you're like, I heard that on the tape, and I know her sponsor didn't tell her that. They did, because they were my sponsors. So I'm not giving them credit anymore. That's it. But thank God for that, because I wouldn't have known, I wouldn't have known where to find certain things in the big book, and I wouldn't have known what it was that I was experiencing. But what happened was, it took me a little while to kind of figure out what was going on. So I was sharing the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it wasn't very popular. And my sponsor had a big mouth. Diane had always told me, don't ever keep anything in. Always talk about what's going on. And so therefore, and she also told me that what's beyond the tip of my nose is none of my business, and what anybody else thinks of me is none of my business. And the truth of the matter is that Diane could give a shit. And she taught me, I don't give a shit. If you don't like me, as long as what I'm doing is coming right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I better make sure that it is. That's my responsibility. Then you can say or do anything that you can want to me, and then it's my responsibility on how to react to that. So therefore, I began to talk about the big book, and I wasn't very popular. And I was told that if you don't like the way things are done around here, go back to Texas. All right. Well, that would have been a really nice option, but it wasn't an option that I had at the time. So therefore, I had to stay in New Jersey. So I had to learn this lesson. So what did I do? I just started studying the big book even more. And I really didn't realize where certain things were that I was being taught. I had only heard it orally, right? So therefore, again, I have to be very careful when I start judging other people if they're not doing it the way that I think it should be done, or if it's not coming directly out of the big book. I need to see, where did they learn that? So this is where I learned that there are two Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was thrown out of a meeting of AA.
All right.
Yeah, I was thrown out. As a matter of fact, it was a big book meeting. And there's this old timer there. I guess he had like 40 something years sober, and you know, I guess in the area he was considered kind of a guru. He had a pretty big following, and I raised my hand in this particular meeting, and I started talking about whatever step it was we were on. And right in the middle of me sharing, he stopped me and he said, "You know what? This is a big book meeting. We don't talk about the steps here." He said, "If you want to talk about the steps," he says, "you go to a step meeting. But we talk about what's in the big book here. And that's what we're going to talk about. So we don't appreciate somebody like you coming in and talking about the steps, which got nothing to do with what we're talking about in the big book." So I just didn't go back to that meeting. But I didn't stop talking about what was in the big book. I just kept, you know, I just kept going around and talking about that. Now, what happened to me was that I've discovered happens is when you do this, you get people who want you to sponsor them because you sound like you know what you're doing, whether you do or you don't. You sound like you know what you're doing. So here I am floundering around. I'm trying to study the book on my own. I already know a little bit from the oral tradition that I was given. And I'm studying it on my own. I'm listening to the Joe and Charlie tapes. I didn't even know Joe and Charlie were Joe and Charlie until I moved up to New Jersey. I just thought they were Joe and Charlie. I mean, I was in meetings with them. It's just Joe. It's just Charlie. They were Joe and Charlie. So So I'm listening to the Joe and Charlie tapes by myself, and I'm really, you know, trying to really study this, and I got people asking me to sponsor them. I'm like, all right. So how am I going to pass on what was passed to me, but how am I going to do it in the best way that I know how, so that I can make sure that I can go back and, you know, and find it in the book. So here's what I did. What I did was, as I said, okay, here's what we do. If I'm going to sponsor you, and this is regardless of how much time they had. I know this is first year sponsorship, but for me, this is first sponsorship. This is sponsorship by Mindy. If you're going to be sponsored by me, I don't care how much time you have, this is what we do. Because I don't know, if you say to me you've worked the steps, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means to you. I want to make sure that I understand your program, and the only way for me to understand your program is for me to walk through the steps with you. Besides that, it ain't going to hurt you. So therefore, we meet once a week. If you're a newcomer, you have to call me every day. I really could give a shit to hear about what you have to say every day. I want willingness. That's what I want. I really don't care if you call me every day. That's not the whole entire point. I sponsor 10 people. I want them to call me every day because I've got nothing else to do. No, that's not the point. I want willingness. That's what I'm looking for. So therefore, if you're a new person, you have to call me every single day. If you're not a new person, I want to hear from you several times a week. And I want to hear, just like my sponsor gave me, 5 minutes of the problem. You have 5 minutes to bitch, she said. And she says, I want you to be living in the solution and not the problem. So therefore, you got 5 minutes to give me the problem. Now let's talk about the solution. Much of the time, I had nothing to say after 5 minutes. I just listened to her talk. So therefore, in sponsorship, I talk a lot. So every day I want to hear from you. If you're new, you call me on the telephone. Now, I don't care if you get my answering machine. You can talk to my answering machine. And I don't care what time you call me in the middle of the night. I tell them if it's an emergency, you know, call me after a certain time or whatever. But I am available at all times. But if I choose whether or not I pick up the phone, because somehow I really don't want to talk to them. I just want them to call me. That's all. I just want the willingness. I turn the volume down on the... I don't tell them this, but I turn the volume down. I really don't want to. Yeah. And then I just erase it because I know I'm going to hear it again anyway. It doesn't matter. So then we meet once a week. We meet once a week. And we meet for an hour. And the only reason that we meet for an hour is because my sponsor was a great belief that the mind can only handle as much as the tushy can stand, and that's about an hour. So therefore, we meet, and besides, that's all I can tolerate. And so we meet for an hour, and we read the big book. Oh, now, I lose a lot of people right there. We schedule, and we meet, and we read the big book. So that loses a lot of people. So let's just say, if 10 people ask me to sponsor them, which was happening, I mean, I was getting tons of people asking me to sponsor them. And at the time, I really, you know, when I moved to New Jersey, I really didn't, I had time, you know, to do this. And so I was sponsoring like 10 to 12 people at a time. And you know, I was busy, but I was able to do this particular type of job that I had. So it really wasn't that big of a deal. And besides that, I needed to do this because I wasn't getting what I needed from the meetings that I was going to. So I needed, and it says, doesn't it say here in the literature, you know, even in working with others, it says that working with others, you know, when all else fails, that'll save the day. And it says it in a million different places, and I'm just not going to go through all, you know, each of the page numbers because all of you, works when other activities fail. That's on page 89. So that's the last page number I'm going to give you. All right. So, so we work the step when we get to it. Now, meet once a week. That weeds them out, all right? And then we'll read the big book. That weeds some more people out. Then we work the step when we get to it. Now, God forbid that happen. Because, see, they weren't working the steps. Working the steps means let's go to step meetings and let's talk about the step. And let's go to 12 and 12 meetings and let's talk about it. And let me bring my 12 and 12 and let's just go through it and let's just have a discussion about it. And it was news to a lot of these people that the 12 and 12 is a wonderful adjunct to the big book. And that these are wonderful essays that Bill wrote X number of years, because if I tell you how many years it is, I'll get it wrong, because, you know, I'm going to say 12 and I forget how many it really was, after the big book was written. And And it's a wonderful adjunct to how to work in the steps, but the directions for the steps are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So God forbid we actually work the step when we get to it. And so therefore, when they realize that, then many more drop out. So I was beginning to get a reputation here, and it wasn't a good one, oddly enough. And as a matter of fact, not that long ago, and I've been in New Jersey since 1992, and not that long ago, I was asked by somebody to secretly go to a particular meeting and secretly talk to somebody, because the people that were around her were the people that kicked me out of this meeting. And this girl was dying. She was dying of alcoholism because she wasn't in recovery. She was going to the meetings, but she was going to die of alcoholism. And he knew that the only way that she was going to ever survive was to get into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to secretly go and secretly meet with her. And they found out that I had met with her, and they told her, you don't need the Big Book, and you don't ever need to meet with her, because she's a Big Book thumper, and that's not what you need. And of course, she's not doing very well. Not that that has anything to do with me, but that just gives you like the attitude that some of us in Alcoholics Anonymous can have, you know. And it's really actually very frightening. And that's why those of us that are here have a responsibility, and I have a responsibility to make sure that the message that I'm passing on actually does come from not only my own experience, but my experience with what's on these pages and what's in black, actually, not what's in between the words there that I think is there. So we work the step whenever we get to it. And I've lost an awful lot of people that way. And I can certainly tell you this, too, is that one of the girls that I sponsored, we began working together, and like I said, we meet once a week. So she didn't drive, and as long as you're willing to go to any lengths, I'll meet you about halfway periodically. So she couldn't drive, so I would go to her. Most of the time I make them come to me, or we meet at a coffee shop or a diner or something like that. And this girl, I was meeting her at her house, and we were having a little bit of difficulty. My rule was is that if you're new and you miss 3 days calling me in a row, then you're fired. And because I tell them, listen, I can fire you. It tells me on page 96 I can do that. Because I got a line of people out here waiting, not that I'm the greatest, but it's the truth. I got a line of people out here waiting for me to sponsor them, and I've only got room for so many. If you're not going to be willing to recover and do whatever is necessary to recover, then you're out and somebody else is in, because I'm busy. I got, you know, and it's not that I don't care, but this is just the way that it is, and this is just the way that I sponsor. So, therefore, I went to her house one time, and she would skip, she'd call me 2 days in a row and skip a day, so she's pushing it, right? And she'd been doing this for about a month. And I knocked on the door, and she wasn't there. So I'm waiting, and I only give 15 minutes, and because believe me, if she was waiting for her dealer or if she was waiting for the liquor store to open, she wouldn't be late. She'd be early. So I only give 15 minutes for traffic. So I knock on the door, and she's not there. So I leave after 15 minutes, and then I go back the next week. And, we talk on the phone during the week. I'm like, what's going on? And same thing. She'll call me a couple of days, and we try to reschedule. And I go, and somebody answers the door. And she lives in a room upstairs, and the owners of the house open there, and they go, oh, she moved last week. Oh, she moved on me. I mean, that's the first time that ever happened to me. I was moved on. So the next time I saw her at a meeting, I was like, you moved on me. She goes, no, I didn't. See, now, we can't tell the truth from a lie. She just moved on me. So I fired her. But one of the things that, because don't move on me, that's not right. We have to meet every week. If you're going to move, tell me where you're moving. So, but see, here's the problem with her. The problem with her is that she had said to me about 3 weeks before this, she goes, I just don't think this is working out. And I said, and why is that? She said, I just don't think we're bonding. I just don't think that we've just made that connection. And I said, all right. I said, I can understand that, but I'll tell you, it's really not a requirement for sponsorship to bond with your sponsors, so therefore open the Big Book and let's start reading. So I really kind of knew that it was doomed from that point. She's not sober, by the way. And I pray for her. She's a sweet little girl. Okay. So, all right. Here's self-will again. I'm looking at my papers. Okay. That I am following what I feel to me is God's will. If I'm being true to myself, if I'm being true to my heart and my soul, then I'm always going to stand alone. I'm always going to stand alone. And that's really what I found. And I found it really for 10 years in New Jersey. I was unable to find a sponsor. I was unable to find anyone who was working right out of the big book. And it took me about... It took me about 6 years to find just a few people who actually were in the book. And then we finally found a group. And that group had been going on for about, I would say, 3 or 4 years. And there were only 3 or 4 people that were attending the group on a regular basis. And now I would say there's upwards of 30 people that are going to that group every Tuesday night at 6:45. Because I would sponsor and I would make the people that I sponsor go there. They had to go there, and if their jobs interfered, they had to change their job schedules. And that's another thing. I have some rules about sponsorship, is that we have to meet once a week, and they have to call me every day. Also, if you don't have a job, get a job. Let me tell you what my sponsor told me about a job. Diane. Diane had a GED, and any town that she ever walked into, she had, if not a full-time job, 1 to 2 part-time jobs in one day. She told me, if you can't find a job, you're looking for a position. I don't ever want to hear you tell me I can't find a job. So therefore, and she wasn't that nice about it when she said it. So therefore, I've never, ever, ever been very, like, you know, I can't remember your name, but you were saying you're not really easy on the guys that you sponsor with in making their amends because of what you've gone through with regard to making amends. Well, I know what it's like to turn around tomorrow and have a job. So, because my sponsor wouldn't allow me to whine like that. So, therefore, I'm pretty generous, and I give my girls anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks to find a job or they're fired. And I'm going through that with one of the girls that I have right now. Is that, I'm like, get a job. Well, there's no jobs available. Mm-hmm. Well, I saw a, you know, wanted sign out by this, you know, this little girl here. They're looking for a waitress. Well, I can't be a waitress. Oh, really? Why not? Well, because I'm going to school. I've got it. I'm going to get this degree. Great. You can go to school and get a degree and be a waitress at the same time. You know, I don't understand this concept of not wanting a job. One of the things also that I do is I tell them that if you're not in a relationship, don't get into one. It's the big R. Because whenever, that's just the worst word that I think a sponsor can hear is, I'm in a relationship. Oh, my God. I'm not dealing with the person when I'm dealing with the person in a relationship. I'm dealing with the relationship. That's what I'm dealing with. And it's very difficult for me to separate and to help the alcoholism of someone whenever they're in the relationship because, see, that's the way that they get out of themselves. And I have to bring them back to themselves. And this is what is so threatening about the way that I sponsor and the way that people sponsor when it's literature-based. And that is that this book, what it does is it holds the mirror up. It holds the mirror up, and it forces us to take a look at ourselves. So what I'm doing, it's not my truth. It's not me telling you how to live your life. What I'm doing is I'm holding up the mirror, and I'm showing you your truth. And that's what the book does. And that's what, so when they're in a relationship, it's extraordinarily difficult for me to show them their truth because they're trying to connect themselves with another person. So, how long should I not be in a relationship? I hear in meetings it's 1 year. No, that's not it. There's nowhere in the literature where it says that. For some people, it could be 1 year. For some people, like most of the people I sponsor, 5 years isn't even good enough. But it's whenever you're on enough strong spiritual ground, you got enough time behind you, so that I'm strong enough in who I am. So that I'm not going to be looking for somebody else to fix me, or I'm not going to be looking for somebody else to make me whole. There's an old-timer named Artie B. down in Monmouth County, New Jersey. Yeah, you know Artie? Who says, two wackos don't make a wello. You see?
See, it takes old timers to be profound like that to explain situations. So that's really, so I tell them that, and they don't really like that. My sponsor, Cass, now says that if you're not in a relationship, don't get into one until after you've worked the ninth step, which is pretty good. And what I've discovered as a result of that is that, you know, the newer ones, they're itching to get into a relationship. By the time they're done with the ninth step, the last thing they want to do is get into a relationship. They're like, oh, no way. I'm not doing that. What was attractive to them before they finished the ninth step is no longer attractive. And I also tell them that anybody that's attracted to you and that you're attracted to right now is sick. You're just, it's just not gonna work out. It's not gonna work out at all. So, don't get into a relationship because I don't want to deal with it. That's okay. Okay. Now then. Now, what about giving? What about on page 98? What about this? Let's see. I kind of like this page. Is it 98? Yeah. I have lots of writing on page 98. Where it says, it's not the matter of giving that's in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute that we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, or claiming that he can't master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Nonsense. Isn't that nice? Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply don't stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of our dependence upon God. That entire paragraph, I suppose we could spend a whole day talking about. But here's what my sponsor said, where it says, job or no job, wife or no wife, I put man or no man, mall or no mall, friends or no friends. See, that's important, mall or no mall, for me. That was very important for me. I wrote that in red. There's not a lot of red writing in here, but mall or no mall is in there for me. It also tells me that anything at all that I put ahead of my sobriety, that I'm going to lose it. And the interesting thing is that, you see, whenever I had all these people who wanted me to sponsor them, and I was sponsoring them, and all of a sudden their lives start to get a little bit better. And we've experienced that. You know, they're back in the big bed, and you know, they're not on the couch anymore, and the kids are talking to them, and the job's getting a little bit better, and then all of a sudden they just can't make that meeting, or they start to cancel the weekly meeting that we have. And another thing that I do also is and my sponsor does this. I found it kind of interesting that it just kind of happened to. Run into I didn't know that. I'm kind of stuttering here because I'm thinking about 14 things at one time and I only do well with one. All of the girls that I would meet, we'd meet once a week and work the step, and we got to it, and then every other week or every week as we could, we would all meet together, and then we would talk about what was going on for the week. And years later, which is now, I am with a woman who sponsors a lot of women, and she meets with them once a week, and every other week we get together, and we call each other sisters. We're sisters in sponsorship. So I think that's good. I never really had that kind of a connection. It's different when you're doing it, when you're sponsoring. It's far different being sponsored that way, and I'm very grateful for that. That's just the kind of thing that I need. So I think that I'm very blessed to have that. But so these girls that I sponsor, life starts to get a little bit better. And I have to tell them, and I have to bring them back to this page on 98, where we're really just telling you that anything that you put before your sobriety, you'll lose it. And they'll say, oh, but my marriage. Oh, but my children. Oh, but my job. And I'm learning this, and this is a concept to teach somebody that's new, especially in first year sponsorship, is that if you are like married, and I put that in quotes, if you are married to your job, or if you are married to your marriage, like if this is it, if I've got my claws into it, then that comes first before your sobriety. That comes first. So what I have to do is I have to explain to them that you can be connected to the concept of your marriage. You can be connected to the concept of your job. But if you have your claws in it, you're going to lose it, because you're going to put that before your sobriety. You're going to not go to meetings if your job calls for it. You're going to not go to meetings if your husband asks you not to. And you're not going to not go to meetings if too many things are going on with the kids. You have to have sobriety first. Sometimes that's a very difficult thing, especially for the women that do have children. I tell them that I sponsor them because I want them to be sober mothers. You know, they were absent mothers even while they were there. So the fact that they're away at a meeting is not damaging the children as much as being right there being drunk. But that sometimes is very difficult for people to grow a hold of. Now then, what about giving? What about me giving? Okay, there's a couple of things as far as me sponsoring. And that is that I sponsored this one little girl, and she's a chronic relapser. I don't believe that she's sober still yet, but she... You know, how much am I supposed to give? Now, I know that I'm not a bank, and I'm not a marriage counselor, and I'm not a this, and I'm not a that, because the big book tells me that. I don't know what page that's on. Y'all do. So, but I think it's on the right-hand side of the page down in the middle. And so how do I do this? Well, I think that actually it's on each individual basis, and I think that any time I'm going to give money, that I need to make sure that that's exactly what it is. That I've prayed over it, that I talked to my sponsor, and I don't expect it back. Because if I'm going to expect it back, and I need to turn to page 449 to the end, that I know, 417 to the end in the fourth edition, that I know, as far as expectations and discarding them whenever I give money, especially if it's to any alcoholic, but a newcomer in particular. So, and how do I do that? In this one particular instance, there was this girl, and she really did need a certain amount of money in order to keep her apartment. Now, only because of the situation that she was in, and only because I felt that she was working the program at the time, did I feel comfortable enough not giving her the money, but writing the check and walking it over and helping her pay the rent for just that month. Now, it was her responsibility from that point forward. She ended up losing that apartment. That's on her. But that's, and I wasn't resentful toward that, because I made that decision for that month. You follow? That's what I have to do. I do that with any alcoholic, but I've only done that once, because I don't give money. I don't give money to alcoholics. That's just my thing. But, and then of course tomorrow that something will happen, and then I'll change, you know. That's just kind of the way it is. So anytime I say, you know, I shouldn't have said that, because that's going to happen tomorrow. I know that's going to happen. Anytime I say I never or I'm not going to, it always happens. The other thing that, and along the same vein, another girl that I sponsored also early in sobriety, she was losing her apartment, and it was in the wintertime, and I had to make a decision whether or not to allow her to stay. We had a two-bedroom apartment at the time. I had to make a decision whether or not to allow her to stay in our apartment for a few days until she could find another place. And I prayed about it, and I talked to my husband, and because I never could actually put my finger on what it was that wasn't going right in her program. She was actually doing everything. She was calling me every day. She had done the inventory. But there was something that just wasn't right. And I prayed about it. And I really couldn't, like I said, put my finger on it. But I made the decision to allow her to lose that apartment that day, and she had to stay in her car for a few days in the wintertime, and I could have allowed her to stay with me. So what's the difference between the two? Well, I certainly wish that I could tell you, other than the fact that it was something that I knew intuitively, something that I knew because I'd prayed about it, and just something that I felt as a result of sponsoring them, that it was the right thing to do. So, you know, it's not the matter of giving that's in question, but when and how to give. See, that's on me. You know, that's on me. And that often makes the difference between failure and success. Now, who's failure and success? It kind of looks like it's talking about their failure or their success. But actually, I think maybe it's also talking about my failure or success because of my expectations that I put on whatever it is that I'm doing. And I have to be very careful also that the minute that I put my work on a service plane and it says the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God's. You know, that's very important also. Because, you know, as a sponsor, I can get an ego. And when they're talking in a meeting and they say, and I did this and I did that, I want to be recognized. I'm their sponsor. I sponsor that person. I sponsor that. They get up and talk and they do a wonderful talk and everybody claps. I sponsor that person. That's me. I sponsored her. Yeah, that's how she got where she's at. Yeah. That's all me. And then when they get drunk, she didn't do what I told her to do. She'd done everything I tell her to do. She'd be sober today. You know? So I have a tendency to take responsibility, you know, for the people that I sponsor. Whenever, and I don't know if other people that aren't big book sponsors do it this way, but I just know that this is just kind of a vocational hazard. And I'll tell you another thing that happened to me as a result of this vocational hazard of sponsoring like this. And that is that I just really believe that I know how to work at the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't. I really do. My way's the right way, and that's just all there is to it. So what happens to me is I start preaching. So when I go into meetings and you're sharing, well, you're done. Well, you hear what I got to say. And let's just see how many people ask me to sponsor them when the meeting's over. How many people come up to me? How many people are surrounding me at the end of the meeting? Let's just see. So I did this, and I did this for quite some time when I first got into New Jersey. And as a result of that, the people that were really sick in that meeting, they were staying sober, and I was getting sicker. And I started hurting, and they just seemed just as happy as pigs and shit. And I just couldn't understand how come my superior program was not working here. And so it occurred to me that maybe I should just keep my mouth shut. God forbid, because Diane never kept her mouth shut, and she always told me to open my mouth. And so what I had to do was I had to become teachable. And I had to make sure that if I was going to open my mouth, was I going to be sharing in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, or was I going to be teaching and preaching? Was I going to teach you something? Was I talking to you about you and what you need to learn and showing you where it was in the big book? Or was I sharing my experience, strength, and hope? And I discovered that for 2 years, I didn't have nothing to say. I had nothing to say. I could not share honestly in a meeting for 2 years. And then it took me a while to just open my mouth when I realized that you people could teach me something. You people that didn't even know the big book could teach me something. You people that were staying sober and happy, happier than me. Because see, I was in self. So that's something that I learned, and that's something that I pass on to the people that I sponsor, because I just think it's a vocational hazard of studying the big book this way. Because we know what's right. And I discovered, especially in first-year sponsorship, one of the things that I've seen is, and it always happens, and I can tell them over and over and over again that this is going to happen, and then I watch them do it, and they share in a meeting, and I'm like, shut up. You're preaching. You're teaching. You know, you're not sharing your experience, strength, and hope. You know, you just want to grab them by the ears and shake them. You know? And other people are looking at them going, you know, all they got to do is open their mouth 2 seconds. Yep, Indy sponsors them. Yep. You know who sponsors that one? Y'all know who sponsors certain people. You know, if they open their mouth, okay, I know who sponsors her. Okay, I know who sponsors him. Or, oh God, you know. So it's like it's just a hazard. But as a sponsor, it's my responsibility not only to watch myself and make sure that I don't get on this superior cloud, but also to make sure that the people that I sponsor are also not getting on their little superior cloud. Because guess what? Whenever they fall off, and they will, and whenever I fall off, and I will, we got to make sure that we don't fall off into a vat of alcohol, right? Because that's what the deal is here. That's what the deal is. When do I go to? Hey, that's cool. I've just wasted all this time. This is good, and I've only looked at my self-will notes here just a couple of times. 5 more minutes. Gosh, what the heck can we talk about? One of the things also that I've always found very important for sponsorship, especially in the first year. I have easily sat here and gone through exactly how we work the steps, but you've already had a whole week into that. So we do it just that way, just so you know. If you've been listening to everybody talk about how they do it out of the book, that's the way it's done. All the four columns and all that good stuff. And but one of the things also that that I learned, and this is I learned from Diane as well, and Diane, by the way, went back out and drank again. And the reason that she went out and drank again is because she stopped working the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way that she did that was she began to think that she knew how to work the program. And when the old-timers started pointing out to her certain character defects, she stopped hanging around the old-timers. And she started going to newcomer meetings. Because guess what? She was the guru. She knew the big book. She knew what she was talking about. And when she was done, there was lots of people flocking around her and asking her to be her sponsor. She was on a pedestal. They put her on one, and she let them put her off, and she put herself on one. And she fell off, and she got drunk. And that's been well over 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And she's had trouble staying sober ever since. And the last time I heard from her was not that long ago, and she put together about 3 months. And Mac, the guy, my first sponsor, you know, my man sponsor, he also went back out because they both started going just to newcomer meetings. And that's something that they had originally told me. They said, if you find people, you watch what they're doing. And if they're not hanging around the old-timers and they're not taking it really well whenever an old-timer tells them to shut up, no matter how much time they've got or how much knowledge they've got, if they don't take it well when an old-timer says shut up, then they start just hanging around newcomers, that's when you need to start watching them and back away. Because that person's putting themselves on a pedestal and allowing other people to put them on a pedestal. But one of the things that I've always done is I've always shared with the people that I sponsor the problems that I've gone through. Because I want them to know one thing, and I have to be reminded of one thing also, and that's that I'm human. And that I experience pain. Because I know that one of my sisters now says that the first time she saw her sponsor cry, she thought it was like, oh my God, oh my God, you know. What's going on here? My world is crumbling. Well, I constantly remind the people that I sponsor that I'm human. And because of all the problems that I've had in sobriety, that's, you know, I talk very, very loudly about them. They should all know that I'm very human. But it's important that they know that. And not that I actually go to the people that I sponsor and not that I share with them all the deep, dark secrets, but I let them know what's going on and that I am in pain. But I don't sit there and I don't whine about it. I can whine to my sponsor who kicks me in the butt and tells me you got 5 minutes because I found yet another one who tells me to shut up if I need to be told to shut up. But I tell them the solution as well. Even if I don't have a solution, I tell them what I know the solution to be. And I've stood up from the podium and I've shared that that I have thought about suicide in sobriety. And oh my Lord, you wouldn't believe all the people that came up and said, and with all the things I've shared from the podium about the things that I've gone through. 6 years ago, my husband died, and I shared all of the pain that I was going through at that period of time. I've shared thoughts of suicide from the podium since that period of time. I've shared lots and lots of things that you just don't hear from the podium. Because guess what? Working these 12 golden steps to sobriety, you know, it ain't just a walk in the park. And I make sure that the girls that I sponsor know that and that they don't hear that from me so that whenever things do happen, they know that it's okay and it's just a part of being human. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, I just let them know that that it's okay. But I shared about that from the podium. And somebody with 40 years sober walked up to me and he said, I've been thinking about suicide for 8 years and I've never shared it with anybody. So let me say this, is that if you're sponsoring somebody, especially a newcomer, you have a grave responsibility to make sure that they know that you're human and that you need to be human. And not to judge people, not to judge them, and don't put yourself on any kind of a pink cloud or a podium, and not to judge anybody else's program either. It's a hazard of being a big book thumper, and I have to watch it. But I'll tell you something, it's the greatest thing. Thanks for letting me share.